So I said it to you before, but I'm going to say it again so that it's on the air and it's real. I come to you here in Mesa, Arizona, contrite and sorry and ready for your comments because in the 3+ year tenure of Ask an Atheist, I have said some not kind things about the Arizona area, even though I'm from here, love it here, had some trouble here, had to get away, that sort of thing. So today, we're going to make all those things right. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. That is not our live call-in number, that is the voicemail number, because we are live in Mesa, Arizona. How you guys doing? Joining me today is Becky. How are you enjoying the vacation part of the tour, getting to hang out in Phoenix and friends and family and such?
I'm loving it. We had a real rainstorm just before the show.
We did. Actually, there's a thing about rain in the Pacific Northwest, which is, okay, it doesn't rain so much as drip all the time. It's not really rain. You
it's
guys have
misty,
honest, real rain.
And foggy and maybe showery and a little sprinkly.
And the other thing I miss that the Puget Sound area doesn't get is the smell of rain. And it's very strong around here, and it's one of the things that I really miss. I also miss thunderstorms, but those get kind of scary. Also joining us,
Richard Dewey is here.
Hi.
Richard Dewey of the Humanist Society of Greater Phoenix. You're the president of that organization,
correct? That is correct, yes.
How are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic.
And I heard from you that you had listened to the Sacramento episode and had a few things to say about...
I did. I want to respond to your comments about Arizona. I have a lot to say about that.
We're looking forward to it.
So... obviously, you're the president of the Humanist Society of Greater Phoenix, which, by the way, has a fabulous humanist center. I am amazed.
Thank you. We love it.
Yeah. So is this the major organization in Arizona, or are there others?
The major organization regarding humanism
or the major non-theistic organization?
I want to talk a lot about that.
Okay.
There are a lot of organizations, a lot of diversity. You talked about that earlier. And I have quite a few comments about that, in fact.
What other organizations are there?
Okay. Well, we'll start off with in 2011, I think, is when maybe it was 2010, the chapter of the Americans United, Greater Phoenix chapter, got started. That was started by Ann Marnick, who was in the audience, by the way, or she was in the audience. Where'd she go? No, she's around here someplace. There's Ann. And the Freedom from Religion Foundation, the Valley of the Sun chapter, was also started by Ann Marnick, and she is still the president of that. So she's president of both of those organizations, which I think is pretty good. You mentioned earlier Camp Quest, the first time ever that we had Camp Quest in the state of Arizona this year. So we're obviously very excited about that as well. And then there's the Phoenix Atheist Meetup Group. That has approximately 1,700 members following that organization.
Whew.
So did all of this start happening the day I left?
Yeah, right when you left. It was because you left.
Was I holding all this? I am so sorry. I had no idea what a terrible effect I was having on the community.
I haven't even gotten to the best part yet. There's still more.
Oh, okay.
There's a lot more, actually.
Speak on.
There's
a
lot more. Is it all right if I
speak
on?
Absolutely. Okay. That's what this is about.
The really big thing is...
I want to feel the pain.
Okay, good. In the last couple of years, the rise of the Secular Coalition for Arizona.
If I remember right, that is the first local chapter of the Secular Coalition of America?
Is it one of the first state chapters?
It certainly is. It's the very first one.
I've been following Secular Coalition for Arizona on Facebook for a while now, and boy, there is just some awesome political action going on as well.
Yes, there is. And in fact, I can talk a little bit more about that, too, because I have a lot to say. Like I said, so much has happened in the last 2 years. In fact, the executive director of Secular Coalition for Arizona could not be here tonight, but she left me a message, and I wanted to read it to you. It'll give you a little bit of an idea, kind of a poke at you about your comment about Arizona.
Here we go.
So here we go. All right. So what she said was, one thing I would mention, because this is a huge deal that really shows no one should write off Arizona, is that for the first time in 15 years in our state, not a single bill limiting access to reproductive health care was passed in our state. And only 2 of the 10 bills SC Arizona lobbied against were signed into law versus half of the 18 that passed last year. CAP, that's Center for Arizona Policy,
right,
not our friends, called this session the most challenging and disappointing in memory. Yay.
Ooh.
That is definitely applause.
Wins all around for SC Arizona and our community of supporters. So she wanted to pass that message on to you.
That is amazing. Okay. That is really something.
Yeah, yeah. And working with her, which I don't know how much time I have on this, but working with her, something else happened this year, which was national news, which I'm sure you must have heard about. We had a freshman representative in the Arizona House.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Ah, heard about that?
Oh, that was making splashes up in Washington
State. First time, secular invocation on the floor of the House on May 21st. And I have that invocation here if you don't mind my reading it. But
go right ahead.
Okay, well, it's a little bit long, so I'll try to make it fast. But this is really awesome. I think you really like this. Most prayers in this room begin with a request to bow your heads. I would like to ask that you not bow your heads. I would like to ask that you take a moment to look around the room at all of the men and women here in this moment, sharing together this extraordinary experience of being alive and of dedicating ourselves to working toward improving the lives of the people in our state. This is a room in which there are many challenging debates, many moments of tension, of ideological division, of frustration. But this is also a room where, as my secular humanist tradition stresses, by the very fact of being human, we have much more in common than we have differences. We share the same spectrum of potential for care, for compassion, for fear, for joy, for love. Carl Sagan once wrote, quote, "For small creatures such as we, the vastness is bearable only through love." Unquote. There is, in the political process, much to bear. In this room, let us cherish and celebrate our shared humanness, our shared capacity for reason and compassion, our shared love for the people of our state, for our Constitution, for our democracy, and let us root our policymaking process in these values that are relevant to all Arizonans, regardless of religious belief or non-belief. In gratitude and in love, in reason and in compassion, let us work together for a better Arizona.
Oh, wow.
Can I give you goosebumps or what?
I think that's so. Awesome. There they are.
Yep. And that's part of it for me, is if you told me six or seven years ago that the AZ House would open up with that, I don't know that I would have believed.
That is pretty awesome. And I was there,
amazing.
And several people here were there, in fact.
I would have believed, unless you made a believer out of me. But I bag on Arizona on the show, but this is how I want it to end. This is what I'd like to see, is an incredible, just from the brief synopsis you've given me of what's going on in Arizona, with all the organizations, with the Arizona government, which again, I am just gobsmacked by, a word I don't use very often. it's just a testament to you guys and how active and just how much work has been done before, just in Arizona, that either, you know, that I didn't see before and since becoming an activist has been made very clear to me, or is being made very clear to me right now. And one thing I mentioned before, which is something, I'm also on the board of directors of Humanists of Washington, and we've been trying to put together a humanist center for quite some time, almost the entire life of the organization, which is 30-some years now. Tell us about sort of the path towards a humanist center.
Okay, well, first of all, HSGP was here when you left. It's actually been around for over 40 years.
I rather assumed.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But this building, actually, we moved in here in 2011. I can tell you that if you're going to get a building that's going to house all the humanism that you have, I'm assuming there's quite a few, you want to plan ahead, and you want to make sure that you have plenty of money. So you're going to have some people with money. We luckily had people with money, and we also had people with a lot of time and energy on their hands, and we did a lot of work on this building to get it ready. Now, all of 2010 was spent renovating this building and redoing this entire room. And it's also very expensive to run, so you need to have that planned out in advance as well. It takes a lot of money to run this building and to keep things going.
And now, I was speaking to you before the show, Richard, and you said that generally you're open on weekends for lots of events, but during the week, then it's not manned, it's not staffed. And is that something that you're working towards?
Yes, absolutely. Our vision is to eventually have this building open all the time and have somebody here manned all the time, but we have to have enough income to be able to afford to keep somebody here all the time and keep the air conditioning going and keep everything running. So yes, that's the vision. Certainly there are events that happen during the week. It just doesn't happen as often as it does on the weekends. The weekends are very busy here all the time. We have a lot of things going on the weekends.
I've been looking at the calendar. You've got a Sunday speakers, a simultaneous children's program during time. And that would be my dream. That's awesome. I mean, a community, just as Sam said a little bit earlier before we started the show, just having lecture circuits, that's not really community building. When you have participants of all ages that are able to be there, benefit from it, then you really start building community. So what's the children's programming like?
Well, we did have the Odyssey of the Mind program going for the winter. And actually, as I understand it, the kids won some kind of a prize. I think there was second place or something in state. And they did fantastic.
Love it.
But the children's program that we have beyond that at this point is still a little bit loosey-goosey. We don't have anything really good, but we do have people that go back there and work with the kids and give them crafts to work on and give them all kinds of challenges. And of course, they have lots of playtime, too. And that usually happens while we're having meetings at the same time. So kids get to come as well, and sometimes the parents actually get to come out and listen to the speakers. But we do have some volunteers that work with that quite a bit. In fact, I think one of the volunteers might be here in the room. I'm not sure, but...
Any thoughts of teaming up with Camp Quest or is a lot of the, I mean, it was the inaugural summer of Camp Quest.
I'm not sure what you mean by teaming up. We had several kids from this organization that went to Camp Quest, and we had people that were, I think we had some volunteers from our organization that went and served at Camp Quest.
Excellent.
So,
one of the things we found in the greater Seattle area is that, people who are staffers at Camp Quest, who are volunteer instructors, who are cabin counselors, will carry that over into the rest of the school year and will come to our Darwin Day programming, where we'll have we'll have an awesome lecture from one of our university biologists, and next door is where the real fun stuff is happening with the, ice cream maker and our Lego blocks and all kinds of stuff like that. And so that's been really fun for us up in the Pacific Northwest, and to have that extended throughout the year can be really valuable for community.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one of the things we noticed when we were looking at your list of events was the Humanist Drum Circle.
Gosh. I was going to bring that up, but I was going to lead into it a little bit slowly, but you want to just jump right into that.
I'm actually surprised because I'm not used to hearing drum circle in a humanist context, to be honest with you.
Well, you mentioned earlier something about it, not today, but actually in one of your podcasts, you used to be a little bit involved in the New Age crowd.
I did the Grand Tour when I was a teenager.
Well, yeah. I did the New Age crowd for many, many years. I led a lot of drum circles, but I came to understand that drumming is more about discovering the basic human rhythm.
Yeah.
And so when I brought it here a year ago, people that came had no idea what a drum circle was, because this crowd obviously doesn't really get into drum circles. But the people that came actually loved every minute of it, and they begged to do it again this year. So I ran it again this year. And actually I co-hosted. One of the other co-hosts is here as well.
I'll be right honest with you, that's one of the things I missed. And, I like drum circles. I think they're fun.
Oh, they are. They're a blast.
Yeah.
They really are.
And you don't have to pull punches. Just go ahead and call me a jerk.
I'm not going to do that.
what this speaks to is something that we've been talking about and seeing increasingly, is that some things that seem to be the domain of religious communities and religious organizations really are the domain of all humanity.
Yes,
and so when you
true.
Have something where people congregate and create music or create rhythms or have communal singing, that's not something that is inherent to a belief in God necessarily.
That's true.
I love that it's here and that it's around, and just one more of those kinds of things.
So you also have two local grocery chains who both return a percentage of the money HSGP members spend at their stores.
Correct.
What?
They have programs. It's not just for HSGP, but they do it for HSGP. Bashes and Fries. With Bashes card, you can get, I think it's 6% return on it's 3% for Bashes. Mm-hmm. And for any purchase that you buy, they give us 3% or 6% back. I forget which one it is, but Fries is the same thing. Now, Fries program is changing very soon, and I think our board of directors is going to try to figure out how that's going to work in August.
Okay.
But it may actually be easier rather than harder. So, that we get money back. Actually, one of our fundraising approaches.
So was it difficult to get the local stores to buy into that, or was it just a simple process?
No, they were already doing the program. All we did is said, well, we want to do it. And
there's been no...
And they don't know that we're heathens, so they just said,
figure that out. Okay.
So whatever.
that was sort of my question of what I'm thinking is, all right, so is this sort of like an Amazon, put the Amazon logo on your website and click through it, and then a purchase of your, a percentage of your price goes to that. And I'm just waiting for someone to find out saying, wait a minute, well, so I understand the Youth Basketball League and the Environmental Center, but humanists, that means you're atheists.
Yeah, well, it's been going for some time and we haven't had any problems, so I assume it's going to be just fine.
That's interesting. I, I say that the Puget Sound area is fairly, you know, one in four Washington campaign, like I talked about during the talk. But we've had no small amount of arguments with local businesses when they find out, like when we do events, when we had Shelley Siegel up in Tacoma most recently. We had everything figured out, and we were days away from the event, and they pulled the rug out from under us because we're an atheist group, and our show was called Ask an Atheist. And I just sort of...
You laugh. This was real. I don't want a folk singer-songwriter that has released a concept album called An Atheist Album. I'm sorry, we're a coffee shop, and we love singer-songwriters, but this does not align with our beliefs, so we won't be able to host
you. So atheists do have song.
Yes.
What was that?
Steve Martin, atheists do got some songs.
That was funny. Yeah.
So what have I missed so far? I know I've highlighted a couple things.
Oh my goodness! What have you missed? There's tons of things you miss.
I'll
so it's just as far as this organization is concerned, or as far as the state of Arizona, because I can talk on both.
Whatever you think is most salient to my listeners.
Well, I'll start off with a little bit of what we do here. One of the things you talked about earlier extensively was the need to build community and fellowship, and I think that's what Humanist Society of Greater Phoenix really does more than anything else. That's what we do well. And we're not necessarily quite as activist as some of the other organizations, but we are obviously very affiliated with a lot of the activist organizations, and we certainly support Secular Coalition for Arizona, which, by the way, Secular Coalition for Arizona is currently liaised with at least 15 organizations around the state. And I don't know how many people that amounts to, but it's a lot of people.
Fantastic.
And I can give you the list of them if you want, but I guess I have the whole list right here, including one that is in process. Jesse, who is the president of the Secular Student Alliance at U of A, is in the audience tonight as well. And speaking of that, four of the ones that are liaised to SCAZ right now, Secular Student Alliance's there's Mesa Community College, which is really big. We talked about that earlier tonight.
MCC's got a SSA affiliate?
Yeah, they certainly do.
Nice.
And it's really big, and they're very, very, very successful.
Well done.
And NAU does, and Prescott College, and Embry-Riddle in Prescott.
Nice.
And as it turns out, just before this got started this evening, we had another meet and greet with Neil Winneman, who is the development director of the National SSA, and he is in our audience as well.
Oh,
so we have some big shots in our audience.
It's been really gratifying seeing the growth of secular student unions and the secular student alliances on college campuses, and it's been really neat seeing in the last 2 years or so them growing on high school campuses as well. I know we've talked a lot with our Florida friends about some of the high school SSAs that are doing some really good work down there too.
This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. We're going to go into a break, and when we come back, we're going to have some news, some emails, and then start talking about more about what I got wrong in Phoenix.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists with a rational worldview informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Doyle's Public House is Tacoma's number one spot for the best selection of import brews and Irish whiskey.
Football matches and Red Sox games, knowledge night and no cover live music.
Doyle's is your spot.
Check us out at doylespublichouse.com or stop by for a proper libation and soda bread at 2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Like us on Facebook for all the latest updates and specials.
Doyle's in Tacoma.
2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma. doylespublichouse.com.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-430-0997. We're at the Humanist Center in Mesa, Arizona for the Humanist Society of Greater Phoenix, and we've got... We thought we wouldn't be doing news when we got farther into the tour because we would be getting farther and farther. We'd be blue shifting away from current events. But this piece of news from The Guardian in the UK is just really hard to pass up on.
Are you sure it wasn't from The Onion? Are you sure?
No, it's not from The Onion. This is from The Guardian. Time of purgatory reduced for following Pope Francis on Twitter. Indulgences, which are granted by Catholic clergy to shave off time in purgatory after death, are being granted for attendance at Catholic World Youth Day in Rio de Janeiro at the end of July. Mindful of the faithful who cannot afford to fly to Brazil, the Vatican's Sacred Apostolic Penitentiary... Really?
I don't think it's a jail, but it's Sacred Apostolic Penitentiary.
Okay. I'm just making sure I got that right, because, wow. A court which handles the forgiveness of sins has also extended the privilege to those following the rites and pious exercises of the event on television, radio, and through social media. This includes Pope Francis's Twitter feed, which has 7 million followers. In its decree, the penitentiary said that getting an indulgence would hinge on the beneficiary having previously confessed and being truly penitent and contrite. Well, I get contrite, but really? Follow Twitter feed, spend less time in not hell.
That's interesting. Very interesting.
At least we don't have to purchase our time off for good behavior.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
We've moved along 1,200 years.
I'd like to forget that, but I mean, that was the thing, is they got rid of indulgences once upon a time. They figured indulgences were a bit wacky, and then they brought them back because I guess membership was flagging. I don't know. Is it this new Coke, these new indulgences? I mean, it's the weird thing about Catholicism. There are many, there's a lot of Catholics in the United States, and I guess sometimes they don't realize that the church does stuff like this. There's a court in the Catholic Church that can basically sentence you to hell or more time in purgatory. And that really happens.
Well, in this case, less time.
Or less time. They're giving, yeah, and they give you less time for performing community service or for following, I guess, Pope Francis's secret AA meeting on Twitter or something like that.
I want to see a rival Lutheran organization doing 96 tweets against the Catholic indulgence, stapling the tweets. No.
This is the first time I've ever wanted crickets chirping on my soundboard. No, seriously, there's got to be a response to this. I mean, I get it. Religions exist in the 21st century, so they're going to use new technologies. I remember got to be about 12 years ago now. The first email encyclical, and the Pope was in front of a huge crowd sending out his email using the same Dell Inspiron that I owned, except they replaced the Dell logo with the Vatican logo, and he hit send, and then this big graphic behind him showed up with emails going to the major dioceses just flying into the ether, suggesting that the delivery method for these emails was heaven. It was a weird moment. What I'm saying here is that we think that people are getting more secular, that there's less superstition in the world. We'd like to think that, but a lot of these things still happen, and a lot of people don't know that this kind of stuff is still going on. Just how wacky religion can be.
I like the new tools for old tricks, and I'm okay with it. Hey, you know what? I get to follow Frank's tweets, and then maybe go straight to heaven.
That took me a minute.
I think they're probably trying to get closer to the younger crowd. I think that's what they're doing. They're getting more of the technology, so they're reaching out to the younger crowd, which obviously they're losing.
Yeah.
So they're probably reacting to that, and I think that may be what's going on.
I was confused that World Youth Day is actually a week.
Yeah,
I don't know
how
that works.
World Youth Day, week long. That happens a lot. There's a show that comes after us occasionally called The Lutheran Hour,
It's 30 minutes long. There was a show following us back in the scan days when we were on television called All Day Live. It was pre-recorded and 45 minutes. I don't get it. So we actually have some emails that we should cover. The first one comes to us from Joey from New Jersey, and this is an oldie but a goodie, so we drag it out because this is a question we get a lot. And I'll give it to you first, Richard. What are your thoughts on the existence of biblical Jesus?
Oh, my gosh. Well, let me start off by saying that I've been an atheist my entire life, and I have never read the Bible, and I have very little understanding of it, nor do I care to understand it. Sorry. as far as whether or not there was actually a person that was Jesus, since I've seen absolutely no evidence of that whatsoever, I kind of question whether there actually was one. But as far as the biblical Jesus, as far as all of the miracles and so forth, well, that seems like a silly question. I'm sure that's not what you really meant to ask.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people talk about how, I mean, I know growing up in a pluralistic Jewish community and family, it was very much, he's sort of in my religious schooling, well, Jesus definitely wasn't a god, we know that as Jews, but he was a nice man and he was a Jew, and all the while never questioning whether he had any historicity, you know, even to the point where, well, we understand that Abraham is a metaphor, and maybe Abraham as a man didn't really exist, and this is a sort of a retelling of a metaphorical ancestral figure, but Jesus did exist. So that was actually, I think I may have been maybe about 24 years old before it even occurred to me to ask the question whether a guy named Jesus of Nazareth really existed and was really crucified in the manner that's accepted by many, many Christians and many religious people in general. One of the things that then it just occurred to me is, does it really matter?
That's my point, is this is something a lot of people in the atheism community feel that they have to fight, especially the anti-theists. This is a battle which must be won to get religion. I don't really get it. I don't understand it. He could have really existed. That doesn't mean he's the son of God, and it doesn't mean he was temporarily a zombie, and it doesn't mean that he performed all those miracles. It's not something that matters all that much to me. It could be a pastiche. It doesn't matter. Just whether or not these people existed doesn't change my beliefs.
Yeah, I agree.
Caesar Augustus really existed. He clearly existed. Doesn't mean he's in the pantheon along with Jupiter. It's, the existence of people doesn't proclaim their deity. We have another email from a regular listener and source of consternation, Cheryl from Tacoma, and she writes, when you attend a funeral and a prayer is offered, do you bow your head or just stand there impatiently waiting for the show to go on?
I don't know.
Richard.
Funeral is always a show.
Hey, if you're going to sit in the seat, you got to do the job.
I stopped bowing my head a long, long time ago. I tried to do that, I think, for a while just so I could try to fit in. Mm-hmm. But no, I stopped doing that years ago. I don't bow my head. I just stand there and wait for the show. Yeah.
Are you impatient, though?
Impatient? No, not really. Yeah. I'm a very patient person.
I think, again, being raised Jewish, I had a lot of experience going to confirmation, mass, different things like that, and I always knew, like, okay, this is where Catholics will kneel down. That's what that little balance beam that's itty-bitty and covered in carpet is for, and you just don't have to do it, and no one was particularly mad at me for not doing it. During any kind of life cycle ceremony, I'll participate if I feel like it's fun and communal and help celebrate the person being celebrated, or I'll just, I don't know, stand to the side.
For me, I invert the situation. What happens, what would the religious person feel comfortable doing if our positions were reversed? And often, when I've been to funerals of people who did not believe and there were believers there, they did their prayers and they did stuff. Usually, because people are generally polite, they did so quietly. And for that reason alone, I think it's okay to not bow my head and to do what I think is important for these sorts of events. And I'm not sitting, and Cheryl, I'm not like sitting in the back of the room going, yo, bring on the beer! which is what she's expecting of me. And at this point, I think I can be honest and say that I've had several conversations with Cheryl, and this is the kind of question that we get a lot as atheists that tips us off that maybe the person we're getting who's asking the question isn't really there to actually get answers or to start a dialogue, but to make themselves look better at our expense.
Because clearly, if you're not bowing your head and being respectful, you must be standing there impatiently.
And Cheryl is very far away from me, so I can say that. Okay, so we have another email. This is Bradford from Utah, and he writes, in a recent episode, you mentioned how secular chaplains for the military got shot down in Congress because they thought they'd tell soldiers they are worm food. And that reminded me of the colonel in charge of the investigation slash cover-up of Pat Tillman's death trial, who tried to deflect his parents' inquiries by claiming they were only interested because they didn't believe in an afterlife, that their son was worm dirt to them, and not because Tillman was killed by friendly fire. I thought it was worth bringing up on your show. Thank you. So this is something that we've been talking about, and honestly, this is a subject that, when it comes to the military, I feel kind of inadequate to talk about. But recently, the concept of humanist and secular chaplains in the military was shot down in Congress.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
And one of the really interesting things here is that the congressman said, well, we don't need atheist chaplains or humanist chaplains. What are they going to do anyway? They're just going to say, oh, I'm sorry, you're about to die and you're just going to become worm food. And in this case, this was not actually an atheist or humanist that was saying this, but a colonel that was deflecting inquiries from a non-theistic family, since Pat Tillman was an atheist, saying the only reason you want to know is because, your kid's worm dirt, or you think he's worm dirt. So that worm dirt phrase didn't even come from an atheist.
Worm dirt, worm food, this is an argument with a common descent. I wonder where it comes from, to be honest with you. Because a lot of preachers and pastors who go after the atheism community generally all play from a very similar playbook, and they share notes with each other. And this is beginning to sound something programmed, something mimetic. Just, oh yeah, atheists think that you're worm food when you die. Say that, it'll show how stupid they are.
I think that's a childish comment to begin with. I think it's really unfortunate that the military would come back with that kind of a response for something that's obviously very, very important for people that go out there and risk their lives for our country.
Absolutely.
I think it's very, very unfortunate. And I think humanist chaplains in the military would be an excellent idea, and they would do a great deal to comfort the atheist soldiers that are out there, and I wish that they would change their mind about that, and eventually I assume they will, because one way or the other, that's going to happen.
There's very good programs for humanistic chaplains. There's one at Harvard by Greg Epstein, and there's going to be one starting up somewhere else soon, I believe.
Yeah, and there's smaller sort of condensed sessions where you can become a humanist celebrant and officiant and chaplain. As you said, this is just really salient for someone who could be provided a lot of comfort. And I think, Sam, you spoke before we started recording of the religious nun category.
Yeah.
Someone who has no religion that may not be served by someone with a particular religion in the military. And if 1/5 of our Americans do not profess a faith in any or an affiliation with any particular religion, I see a humanist chaplain being able to serve that population very widely, that maybe a Lutheran or a rabbi may not have that same kind of connection.
One of the most salient figures I mentioned in my talk, and as the first time I gave this talk, was the 2012 statistics for the 25 or for the youth adult set, which was 30%, 29% of them were religious nuns. That's 1 in 3.
29% of individuals of Americans between 25 and 34
that's
years
it.
Old.
So it may say in God we trust on the money, but if our motto is supposed to unify us, in God we trust is no longer our motto.
That only applies to 80% of our young people population, and who are our soldiers? What age
mostly
bracket
the
do
young
they fall
people.
Under?
That's correct.
That's a very good point.
I'm too old to be in the military.
So
it's true.
Very quickly, anything else that I missed about the Phoenix area that you'd like to mention?
Just that we're growing by leaps and bounds, and everybody's very excited. We have so much going on. We're constantly doing more and more activities, and the Phoenix Atheist Meetup Group keeps growing. We keep growing. This organization alone has 270 paid members, and then on Meetup we have over 660 followers. So there's just so much going on. I mean, exponential, as you mentioned earlier. I think you can see that our growth here is really fantastic. So I think a lot has changed since you left.
So I have to be honest about the kind of things that made me say the things I did about Phoenix, which is I found it very stultifyingly evangelical and very religious here. It was very hard to find purchase. you know, in conversations and with people and in the community, if you were willing to say that you were an atheist. But I was just some guy sitting, you know, by myself. What does it look like from the perspective of somebody who's part of a larger community?
You can very, very easily find a non-theistic community here in Phoenix now by looking online. You didn't have Meetup probably back then. Yeah. Meetup is very available now. Facebook is very available, and it takes very little search to find us. And people are doing it all the time. In fact, one of the number one reason that people find this organization is through Meetup.
I'm sort of wondering about the interface with the larger community. Has it been generally positive, generally negative? Has there been an interface with the community?
Not much. We have a community outreach program or a service outreach program. In fact, our leader of that is here in the audience as well, and she has gone out with a group of people to St. Mary's Food Bank to help feed the homeless, and they were accepted perfectly fine.
You hear that, no Joe Klein?
Yeah, it does. It does happen. So that interface with the community was very positive. But other than that, we haven't had much interface at all. There's been some people. In fact, it was even a local pastor that came by and spoke. I think that was before I became president, and talked with the president at the time, and seemed to be very positive and very happy that we were going to be here, which I thought was very, very interesting.
So what I'm hearing then is that the availability of social media has actually translated into in-person community building. And one of the things we hear,
yes,
a lot,
absolutely,
or you see criticism saying, oh, atheists only exist online, they're all in their little YouTube circle commenting, or they're in this forum, whatnot. But here you've actually found that it translates very well to in-person
community
building. It
certainly does. Absolutely. We've gotten a lot of people from that.
There's an episode I'd like to do at some point in the future, which is, like it or not, I think atheism was an internet fad for a while. I think a lot of people found the atheism community because suddenly it got popular. And I think it got popular for some of the best of reasons. When after something like 9/11 happens and its primary cause is religion, people are going to look for alternatives. But that fad is ending if it hasn't already ended. And look at this crowd today. This is a community. Look at the crowd in Phoenix and in Tacoma. There was no atheism, Tacoma atheists, before I got there, and a friend of mine started it. And that's sort of the transition from something that people discovered after a tragedy into a community is something that I'd like to focus on at some point. Have you seen anything like that?
As some kind of a tragedy that started this process?
Well, yeah, sort of tragedy which builds into, it's kind of mean to say, but it's a tragedy. People start saying, okay, I'm done with religion, and then it gets kind of popular, and then you end up with a community.
I don't know that I can speak to any specific tragedy that started any of the process here. Mm. I think momentum just started. People started communicating more. We got social media going, and things have just started to accelerate, and it's just continuing to accelerate. And I think it's going to continue because we've got a lot of people out there we haven't reached yet.
This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. We're going to go into another break. When we come back, we're going to take questions from the audience.
Secular humanism is a non-theistic view of the universe built on a foundation of reason, science, and democracy. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking, and we hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. For information on how you can be a part of the humanist activities in the Puget Sound area, become a member of the Humanists of Washington today. Visit humanistsofwashington.org.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince and I want to hide $1 billion in your locker.
Wow, $1 billion?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy, just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Are you tired of being immersed in religious nonsense? You're certainly not alone. Everywhere we turn, it's thank God this and God bless that. It's high time for a pushback, and Reasonist Products is here to help. As the number one atheist t-shirt company in the world, Reasonist Products combines satire with style to draw positive attention to the atheism movement. Express your atheism. Come out with cotton. Visit ReasonistProducts.com today. Reasonist Products. Wear the cause.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
And we're back. Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. And we are at the Humanist Society of Greater Phoenix in Mesa, Arizona, at their Humanist Center. And we're here with the President, Richard Dewey. And we are going to take questions from the audience. Go right ahead. Can I get your name?
My name is Chet Shoup, and it occurred to me when you were talking about the worm food issue that maybe someone should point out to those folks that those worms are deserving also.
Those worms aren't necessary. They absolutely are.
Hi, my name's Chris, and I wanted to talk more about the getting more people involved and building a community with activities. And my big question is, how do we weave a secular community with non-secular specific events?
Oh, that's a good question.
I think, Sam, you spoke a little bit about building a community that said, hey, I would love to have people that would be involved in homebrewing. I think you guys have had a game night. I saw all the games stacked up in the on the shelving over there.
I think on some level, it's you got to throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. You got to find out, from a community building standpoint, find out what your community is interested in. Do you have somebody who likes going skydiving? Maybe that's maybe that's something you can get started. Maybe stuff that people do every day but don't realize it's an opportunity for socialization, like running or cooking or anything like that. I think you just got to find an entry point where people can socialize and people can build a sense of camaraderie, and from that,
yes,
you get fellowship.
The Phoenix Atheist Meetup Group, as I was talking about earlier, they're almost entirely social, and they also have one individual that does hikes all over the state of Arizona.
Yeah.
Almost every weekend he goes someplace with a group of people. So, yeah, that's one of those activities.
I think if you can make the event catchy, like a weekly Atheist with Souls jogging group, then it can be really fun. And anything that sounds kind of
you just did that.
Of catchy. I've seen it.
I'm crickets on that one. Oh, okay.
I'm cribbing from other groups that have done it. Yeah. Right. I know that there's a family group. There's a one particular father that says, hey, you know what? Atheist parenting group, we're going to be in the park at 2 p.m. this Sunday. My six kids will be there, and we'll have Nerf balls, so come and join us. And they say, hey, you know what? Now we've got four families that all met up that didn't realize that there were non-secular families that they could socialize with on Sunday.
Next question.
Hi, I'm Nicole.
Hi, Nicole.
You guys had an episode about this a while ago and taking current events into account. I was a really big fan of the Ender Wiggins saga in high school.
Oh, yeah.
And lately I've been really torn because I always was excited about the movie for Ender's Game coming out.
Oh, yeah.
And recently Orson Scott Card said in an interview, somebody questioned him and he about the gay marriage issue, and he said, well, once the Supreme Court had made their decision, then they've already won, so it's not even an issue anymore. So, do I have to boycott the movie?
We're not going to tell you to boycott it or not.
I'm not going to tell you what to do on that one. I feel that pain. I do like Orson Scott Card.
His writing.
I do like his early work. Yeah, his later work. But actually, this was recently came to a head for me because I was at the movie theater. I actually saw Pacific Rim yesterday, which good movie. And there was a trailer for Ender's Game, and I'm watching. It's like I really want to see this movie, and at the end of it, I go, "Boo!" I guess. And I'm not going to go see it. I mean, I may see it sometime later. I've decided that my money will not touch that project, and that's about all I can say. One of the things we're doing, if you're looking for fundraising ideas, is we're actually trying to find a local theater in Tacoma to play a different science fiction movie. I'd like to do the Star Trek one with the space whales, or the...
Star Trek Meets God.
Yeah, no, not Star Trek Meets God. That one's terrible. or Flash Gordon instead. So if you want to go see a science fiction movie on the opening day of Ender's Game, go somewhere that isn't going to be, you know, that isn't going to pay a bigot money. And I have to. Orson Scott Card is on the other side of the card line for me. So I will not make that decision for you because, boy, it looks good.
We'll just have to download it illegally or something.
I didn't say that.
That's what I got from Sam. All right.
Thank you and welcome to Phoenix, independent of your redemption. Okay. By the way, I'm enjoyed your presentation and continue to do so.
Thank you. Go right ahead.
I'm Mary, and I'd like to ask a question about the NFL sport, National Football League, and the institution of religion within it, the date when that occurred, and how much of that is a PR, and how much of that is really internalized within the players themselves.
Okay, so are we talking Tim Tebow in this case, like that sort of thing? Or?
Well, no, this is really institutionalized within it. And there's a chaplain, and they meet. And I think I read this one column. He's a progressive sports columnist. Anyway, he spoke of it, and I'm on his email list. But it was institutionalized, and I remember him speaking. This is the sports columnist saying that the player, if they're non-believers, they feel intimidated, and they have to join in.
Right.
Or they feel they're not being a part of the team spirit. Spirit in quotes here.
Right.
Okay. So I was just going to ask you if you knew the date of that institutionalization, how much of it is really PR, and how much is it really internalized by the players themselves?
I have to admit that football is not my sport.
We're baseball people.
We're baseball people.
Yeah, I don't know anything about football either, although it does sound an awful lot like what's going on in the military.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any parallels there, but yeah, I think that's a horrible... trend.
And any time you have a sort of coercive social environment, it can be, you don't have to say, you know, Richard, you have to bow your head now and not wait impatiently until the show, you know, is ready to start. But there will be a social pressure for Richard to do that if his entire team is doing such things. And that goes for any kind of, before a business meeting, before a school play starts, before anything like that. And I think having people of differing religions and people from non-religious backgrounds in mind is really essential to the essence of our sort of pluralistic society.
I have a few shorthand rules things that I've noticed that I use a lot. And one is the three most superstitious people I've ever met are surgeons, cops, and baseball players.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's very strange. Cops, I can't, police folks, I can't really tell you why. Surgeons, I think it has to do with troubleshooting and just having so many variables.
Scary.
And, well,
yeah,
I don't know.
Scary.
I think it's
scary.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
They got the scalpel.
Yeah, I'm trying to be nice, but.
Then
yeah,
I wouldn't say what my, I don't want to see the chaplain at that moment in time.
Right.
Okay.
I recently had to do something like that. But I think it's a very sharp divide in medicine. But baseball players, yeah, they'll, you know, put their hats, flip them upside down. They'll touch weird things.
Yeah.
They'll do a little dance on the pitcher's mound. And
I need my special socks.
Yeah, special socks.
Bracelets. Yeah. Yeah.
It's weird how superstition creeps in there. Next question, please.
Hi, I'm James, and when you were talking about the atheist fad on the internet and, you know, some sort of tragedy to spark that, it made me think of, you know, something, not a tragedy, but something else that led me to our family coming here was the birth of our daughter.
Right.
And I wanted to try to find something for her, and I knew I didn't want to go to a church, you know, specifically, but I wanted to find some sense of community. So if, you know, if we didn't have our daughter, I'm not sure we would have found this place as soon as we did.
I like that. That's not a tragedy. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hands down, I think that's one of the most important things we can provide as a community.
Absolutely.
And this is why I've spent so much time talking about stuff like Camp Quest, is we need a place not necessarily to indoctrinate kids, but to give them space to ask their own questions. And this is one of the few spaces where you can get that. So,
yeah.
Next question, please.
Hello again. My name is Xander.
Hi.
Long-term listener of the show. Love the show.
Thanks.
Earlier you were talking about the issue of humanist chaplains.
Right.
It's an issue I'm particularly passionate about in both regards to military and prison chaplaincy. And one of the things that troubles actually not only the humanist population, but a lot of minority religious populations is that there's no central authority for someone to go to claim, like, you know, look, I am an official representative of X. Most chaplaincy positions, you have to have a church or some kind of religious organization to back you and give you your accreditation. So I guess my question would be, is there something in the works for the humanist community in order to build that kind of organization and central authority?
Yes, there is.
Yes, there is.
Yes. You're talking about the AHA?
There's the AHA. Which has been an organization, it's been around for a very long time. It's had very auspicious leadership, Isaac Asimov, Kurt Vonnegut. There's also, if you want like an actual certification process, I mentioned it earlier, Harvard has a humanist chaplaincy program run by a guy named Greg Epstein, who we've interviewed several times now. And that alone, I think, should be accreditation enough for any chaplaincy.
I agree, absolutely. And like I said, I mentioned earlier during the break that James Croft came and talked to us, very, very dynamic guy, and he's a humanist chaplain from Harvard. And I know that it's a pretty fantastic, and he's also very much in support of having chaplaincies in the military, and I imagine anywhere else that we can get them. And we do have, I think, one of our former presidents is a humanist celebrant, and I believe we have a humanist celebrant in the back. I talked about her already three or four times now. Ann Mardick is also a humanist celebrant from AHA. So, yes, we do have that capability.
Very good. And as it happens, we have time for one more question. So
that's you. You're up.
And that's me. My name's Mike. I've been a member here for a few years. And I also have a comment about chaplaincy. And it's actually very important to get humanist chaplains in the military, because frequently, if a soldier is having personal problems, family problems, his kids are having problems, the person you would go to would be the military psychologist. Generally, the chaplains are the intermediary, and they are the gatekeepers in many cases for people to get psychological counseling. And if you're an atheist and you have to go through an evangelical minister, you're going to be in, it's not going to work. So it's really important that we kind of press this issue.
And this is exactly why I feel a little unqualified to speak about it publicly. This is not the kind of stuff that I know. And thank you for sharing this with me. It casts the whole situation in a much more, I don't want to say desperate, but certainly vital light.
Yes.
About why we absolutely need them.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's been a lot of work in the military to lower the stigma of getting psychological treatment and care over, you know, since we have a lot of active vets and returning vets from both Iraq and Afghanistan. And, you know, but that social stigma is still there, whereas maybe going to your religious minister is not as socially detrimental. And so that can be something that can be, you know, really important when you have people that don't identify with a religion, being able to get the kind of counseling and treatment and comfort that that many of their peers are afforded, but without that social stigma.
I'm not sure if it's true or not, but I thought I had heard that if a soldier went to a psychologist within the military, that went on their record. Does anybody know that for sure?
Yes,
I think
it does.
That's correct.
Does.
Yet,
yes,
if they
does.
Go to a chaplain, it's not on their record. So they're very motivated to not go to a psychologist unless it's something very, very serious. So that's another reason for us to really push for humanist chaplains.
If I have time, I've got one little observation.
Absolutely, you've got time.
And it involves the military also. Occasionally, I feel a little aggressive, and it's late night, and I find the military channel on cable. So you get to watch things get blown up.
I have no idea what you're talking
about. I was waiting for things to get blown up one night, went to the military channel, and they were having the story of Jesus.
On the military,
yes.
May have been a military channel or military story. Certainly spurred a lot of military actions.
Yeah.
So I think
over the centuries.
To me, I viewed it as a spillover from all the evangelical stuff that is happening in the military, especially in the Air Force. And it's going, I mean, it's just like spilling over, and it's just the whole thing is metastasizing is the way I viewed it. So
that's something good that point. We're hearing a lot, and it just this just underscores why I think we need to start talking about this subject. I need to find folks to talk about it with is just the military, the religious takeover of the military. I had friends who were skeptical and then had to do who were in the military and were skeptical of that and then had to go back and work with the military and were just absolutely shocked at what they found. So I think it's time to talk about it. So thank you very much. He just set it down. Our show is nearly over, and
I think Sam, you've been adequately schooled by Greater Valley.
So. I hope so.
Okay. do I have forgiveness? I'm
yes,
actually.
Of course
look,
do.
Everybody, I'm seeking forgiveness.
Yes, that's fine. Yeah, I think you're forgiven. Yeah. Look at that in the back.
We'll follow the tweets.
We'll follow the tweets. I've ever since I started talking about Phoenix, I've been following meetups, and it's been. I want to thank you guys. It's been not a personal victory, but it's a victory that's been very felt very personally to watch, to finally find groups that were in Phoenix already, and then just to watch the amazing amount of growth you guys have undergone here. So really, thank you guys very much. This is for you.
We're excited about it.
So thank you very much. So thank you very much, Richard, for being on today.
You're welcome.
Thank you for schooling
Enjoyed
me.
Enjoyed it very much.
Again, the Humanist. We're at the Humanist Center for the Humanist Society of Greater Phoenix. And I believe that's all the time we have for today. If you would like to leave us an email, you can email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. Our website is at www.askanatheist.tv. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, phone number is 206-420-0997. There is no post show this week because we are still on the road, but we're going to go have a couple drinks with these fine people. See you next week.